Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Bald-Faced Truth, Newby and Sampson in for Canzano today on this Tuesday, the edition of Civil War Week here on the BFT and the BFT Radio Network. Rivalry Week across college football, and in our region, it is no different. Saturday at 1 o'clock, the 9-2 Oregon Ducks, 7-1 in the Pac-12, will host Oregon State right on the precipice of making their first bowl game since 2013 at 5-6 overall and 4-4 in conference play. It's a battle of the top two teams in the Pac-12 North Division, believe it or not, and it's going to go down Saturday afternoon at Autzen Stadium. And our next guest here on the BFT is someone that's had quite the legacy in Eugene at the University of Oregon and, of course, in the Civil War rivalry. Mike Bellotti joining the show here on the Bald-Faced Truth. Coach, it's great to hear you once again. How are you, and where are you on this Civil War week?
I'm actually in Houston, Texas. I'm going to have my entire family is going to be out here visiting my daughter and her husband and their family for Thanksgiving, so this whole week. So I'll have to watch it on TV.
You've been a coach in the game for a long time. You've been an analyst as well. How do you enjoy your college football Saturdays in 2019? Do you just get to kind of relax and kick back and watch?
I do. I finally get to watch the games I want to watch, and I get to watch them from wherever I want. That could be in person sometimes. I was at the Oregon game last week in Phoenix, or it can be most of the time on my couch. But I got to about five of the games at Autzen Stadium this year, and then I'm one of those snowbirds that head south for the winter, and when it gets too cold in Bend, I head to warmer pastures. But I watch every game either on TV or in person.
You've got it down. That sounds like a smart recipe to enjoy college football, because you got to mix it in a little bit. You enjoy the in-person experience. You get that kind of rush back on the sideline. I imagine it's different when you're not coaching, but it's got to be still meaningful when you're close to the action and see a lot of the individuals with the University of Oregon that meant so much to you during your coaching tenure there.
Yeah, it's fun to be on the sidelines for a game. You feel the energy. You can see the speed and the athleticism of the athletes. And it always amazes me. They get a little bit bigger, faster, and stronger every year. But it is also nice to have your own comfortable couch and be able to see all the replays you want and order from your wife and in terms of food and whatever libations you want. So, there's a happy mix there. And I think I found it. And it's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it.
That's right. That's right. What is the food of choice? Do you have a favorite menu item when you're at Shea Bellotti getting ready to kick back and watch a Duck game?
You know, I don't, but it might be clam dip and chips. It's probably not very healthy, but, it would be something revolving around nachos or chips and dip.
That is awesome. That is fantastic. Mike Bellotti joining us on the program. Let's start there. I know you were at the game, the Oregon-Arizona State game. It left a bad taste in a lot of Duck fans' mouths, and the reaction, I think, has been a little bit overblown just in terms of how successful the season has been regardless. But, Coach, it was still a game in which Oregon was favored by 2 touchdowns, and I know nobody pays attention to the betting line or anything like that, but the Ducks were heavy favorites, and they came out on the short end and at one point trailed 24-7 in the fourth quarter. What was your takeaways from what happened in the desert last week?
Well, I thought it would have been good if the Ducks called plays or played with a sense of urgency they did when they were down 14 just the entire game. And it's always easy to say that after the fact. I think that just watching the game, Arizona State's quarterback and receivers were better than the defensive backs for Oregon. And Arizona State's defensive backs were better than the receivers for Oregon and the quarterback. So it was one of those things where you watched and Arizona State made plays. Their receivers were able to separate. They made great catches. Oregon's team did not do that as often. It seemed as if to me that the quarterback and receivers were not on the same page a couple of times. And the two interceptions I thought were great examples of that. Also, their center went down early and no excuse, but the snap was not very timely coming back. A lot of times it was very soft and slow coming back to the quarterback, which does screw up the timing of him being able to get his eyes to the reads in the coverage, whether the defensive back or throwing to a wide receiver on time or whatever. But it didn't matter. I think it just was one of those deals where Arizona State was the better team on that day, certainly for the first three and a half quarters. And by the time Oregon got started, it was too late. Then they got the big one late. So I think it was one of those deals where Arizona State played a great game, had a great plan, and their young quarterback, Daniels, is as good as I've seen for that age. And Ayuk and Darby, the two receivers, really were tough to stop on that day. And Oregon's defense has played great this year, and the offense has been timely, but it just it wasn't to be on that day.
Mike Bilotti joining us on the Bald-Faced Truth. Justin Herbert, a really tough game for him in an otherwise stellar Oregon Duck career, and I'm sure there's a bunch of plays he wish he could have had back as well. But nonetheless, you know, his production took a slip last week against Arizona State, and he's an interesting quarterback to analyze as well, Coach, because he's such an easy guy to root for, such an easy guy to get behind. We know how intellectually gifted he is and how much of an upstanding character he is and what he means to the University of Oregon. And yet, nonetheless, when it comes to assessing his skill set, are there not some things to, I don't know about worry is the right word, but some things he must improve upon with some urgency in order to be validated as a future first-round pick in the NFL draft?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I actually think he will be. He's the combination of intellect, intelligence, and athleticism that you want. I don't think he's had the greatest set of receivers to throw to during his career. And that's not against Mario Cristobal. He's building a wonderful program, doing a great job recruiting. And unfortunately, the injury bug has hit the receiver position this year. They lost some, the young man, Dylan Mitchell, I think the leading receiver from last year went out early, which he did a great job and probably deserved that. But I think Justin Herbert is a stud. And I think that he will get better and he'll probably maybe even play better in the NFL than he will at college simply because he'll be surrounded by a skill set around him that will allow him to throw where he wants. And does he have to work on things? Yes. I mean, his footwork sometimes, his choices, he admitted. The one thing I thought about after that game when he said, that was on me, that's the kind of guy that you want to be the leader of your team, because when he makes a mistake, he doesn't blame it on somebody else. He takes the credit or the blame. He doesn't take the credit. He takes the blame for it, and he deflects the credit to others. So I think he's a stud. I think he's got all the intangibles and the measurables. But can he get better, and should he get better? Yes.
Mike Bilotti joining us on the Bald-Faced Truth. It is Civil War week, Coach. You were immersed in this rivalry for the better part of over two decades, just about three decades, Ducks and Beavers. Can you articulate to the best of your ability not only what makes the Civil War rivalry special, but what kind of sets it apart from other rivalries? You're a College Football Hall of Famer. You've seen rivalry games across the nation, but this one's different, not just in terms of longevity, but in terms of intensity. When I ask you, what does the Civil War mean to you? How do you respond?
Well, what it means to me is if you win the game, you have the right to live in the state. If you don't, you might as well move out. It's that simple. It's a small state. There are two schools. You're either a Beaver or a Duck, and you're either going to get really excited and happy or you're going to be really sad for a while. And I don't think people understand that. Everybody, when I was a coach, tried to tell me, oh, Washington's our biggest rival, right? Or USC. I said, no. Oregon State's our biggest rival. Doesn't matter what the record is. Doesn't matter who's going where or what the it's. That is the game that pits friends against friends, neighbors against neighbors, family against family. And you better win because you want to be able to walk out with your head held high. And it's It is an intense rivalry, only 42 miles apart. But, you know, and at points in time in the rivalry, it was much different offenses. You know, they were running the wishbone for a while and some other things. And now it's pretty much just, it's good football. And Jonathan Smith has done a tremendous job, as has Mario Cristobal, in terms of building that program, turning it around. And they're on a collision course. And obviously Oregon State, because they're trying to get bowl eligible, has a lot to play for. Oregon, they're both hurting from last week's games. They were very tough losses in which both teams probably had a chance to win, even the Ducks at the end, but didn't get it and put off the inevitable. It put the Ducks out of the college football playoffs, and it delayed the Oregon State Beavers getting a chance to go to a bowl game. So it all comes to a head this weekend because Oregon still wants to play for the right to go to the Rose Bowl. I know they have to play, and they already clinched the championship, but they want to win out. They don't really care about backing into anything. It's much like when in 1994, I think that some of the coaching staff knew that we didn't have to beat Oregon State. We had already backed into the championship, but that wouldn't have mattered. We still wanted to beat Oregon State, and obviously the Beavs have to win to go to a bowl and to be able to keep practicing and keep the season alive.
Any great rivalry always has a lot of mutual respect, but also a certain degree of animosity. When you reflect on your Civil War experience, can you give us an example or a certain memory of when you felt the animosity from Oregon State fans was at its highest?
Just about every time I set foot in the town. I mean, when they had the dead ducks hanging from rope and they'd fly them in your face, that was pretty pretty difficult. And I mean, Corvallis could be a great little college town unless you're the opposing team walking in there. So I just think one of the things about the rivalry, and you're right, the intensity and the animosity is probably more fueled by the fans and by the boosters and by people like that. I always try to get my team to focus on just playing well and cancel the noise and the realities and controlling their emotions, because the more animosity you thought about or let creep into your mind, then the more problems before the snap or after the whistle that occurred. Mm-hmm. And the real thing you want to do is just focus on playing well, playing within yourself, playing under control. Don't get too crazy. Just let's play good football. Let's play our best game of the season. And a lot of times, when I got here, the rivalry was about, I mean, a million penalties, and it was just difficult to get your young men to focus. And I tried to do that over the course of my career. Sometimes I was successful, sometimes not. I think I've heard both coaches this week talk about control, and it's maybe control your emotions, control your animosity, make sure it works for you, not against you.
You know, Mario Cristobal has done an exceptional job in only year two with Oregon. Jonathan Smith has done a very impressive job in year two at Oregon State. Kyle Whittingham has his boys in Utah playing very, very well, arguably at an elite level. There's a conversation this year, Coach, about who should win Pac-12 Coach of the Year. When I give you those three options, Kyle Whittingham, Mario Cristobal, and Jonathan Smith, who would get your vote right now?
Nobody, because I'm going to wait till the last game.
Smart man.
But I agree with you 100%. I think those three all deserve consideration and mention. And up until last week, I would have said Mario would probably win out. But at this point now, it's going to depend on the Civil War and then the conference championship. And I think the winner of all that probably, you know, I shouldn't even say that. I think what Jonathan Smith has done, if they could win the Civil War, he might be able to get my vote. If he doesn't, then it probably comes down to who's going to win the conference championship.
Before we let you go, Coach, your best Civil War memory. You coached just so many big Civil War games, and we could rattle off almost an endless list of the top games you coached in, Ducks and Beavers. But if you had to give your top memory of this rivalry that you are part of, what would that be?
You're right. There's a lot of memories. I could talk about the 94 game when we clinched the Rose Bowl. I could talk about the 2005 game, which was the Fog Bowl. I could talk about my first Civil War, which was in actually 1989. It was 72 degrees in Eugene, and I thought that was going to be the weather every time in a Civil War, and it never happened like that again. But I will tell you, probably my favorite game and the most lasting memory is the last Civil War, Coach, in 2008. And we were underdogs. We had to go to Corvallis, and we won 65-30 or something like that. And we scored on offense, defense, and special teams. And Jeremiah Johnson had an unbelievable game. Jeremiah Masoli had an unbelievable game. And it just was one of the greatest. I didn't know it was going to be my send-off. That wasn't my intention at that time. Mm-hmm. I actually figured out later on that I wanted to walk away. But I couldn't think of a better game to end the Civil War than that one, simply because when you're the underdog, it's great to go into somebody else's house and win. And when you I remember Chip Kelly, who was my offensive coordinator, said, "Coach, they should change the speed limit." I go, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, it's only 55 between Corvallis and Eugene." I said, "Well," he says, "Well, we scored 65. They should raise the speed limit."
You guys did raise the speed limit in that rivalry with that win. I'll always remember the thousands of roses that were in the stands at Reser Stadium and on the field, because you broke Beaver fans' hearts. They were going to go to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, I don't worry much about disappointing others. I just worry about our guys feeling good. But I do remember, I've never seen so many strewn roses thrown on the field or thrown around the track or in the stands.
Well, Coach, we'll let you get back to the family on Thanksgiving week. But I tell you what, man, it's so fun to talk football with you. Thanks a lot for taking the time and giving us some Civil War memories. You feeling pretty good about an Oregon victory this weekend?
Yeah, I think Oregon's the better team, and I think if they take care of business. But obviously, they have to. Oregon State can move the football, can score points. I'm not sure they've improved on defense, but if their pass rusher is hurt, and I heard he had a hand in the cast last week, I think that's difficult, because Oregon can be balanced. If they get that running attack going, then Justin's going to have more time to pick and choose his spots to throw and who to throw to. But I think it's going to be a close game. I really do, not like the last couple. And I think that Oregon's got to play well, because I think Oregon State's on a mission, and Jonathan Smith has them believing, and they can score points.
Enjoy your Texas-sized Thanksgiving, Coach. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thank you. Take care.
There he is. Mike Bellotti joining us on the Bald-Faced Truth. He likes the Ducks to win, but Oregon State offensively certainly has more than enough talent and coaching acumen to keep this game close. What are your thoughts? 503-417-7575. You can always tweet the show at 750 The Game, at Judah Newby, and at Peter Sampson. Sampson still coming up on deck with his Blazer thoughts from the win in Midway last night. Mello going for a comfy 25. Plus more of your thoughts as well as the BFT rolls on a Tuesday before Thanksgiving on the BFT Radio Network.
Yeah, Bald Faith Truth, Peter Sampson, Judah Newby, and you. Just had to run back to the studio.
Man, what is that, man? You got a little beads on the forehead because of that.
Yeah, it was maybe 15 seconds before we were back, and I went, oh yeah, I got to get one of those cupcakes, Adriana's birthday cupcakes. Solid, looks good. Had a little taste of the frosting, just a little lick. A licky loo, and it was pretty tasty, considering it's vegan, gluten free, non fat, whatever else it is, a healthy cupcake.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty hungry right now, but I don't know if I can fill my appetite with that. That's got a lot of, a lot of unnecessary health conscious ingredients in it for a cupcake.
It's good.
Is it good?
Yeah, I like it.
But you're just flirting with it.
Told you. They're good.
Oh, I'm not flirting with it. I've moved beyond flirting.
No.
This is the main course.
Well, it's a lot of tongue work for flirting. I'll give you that.
But, yeah, that's how I do.
You're still going from the top down there. And
yeah.
You got to wait for a commercial break to go ahead and inhale that sucker.
It is Adriana's birthday. She is 25 today. We are celebrating it all day long. Call Adriana. Wish her a happy birthday. 503-417-7575. 25 is a good age.
That's right. And her personal cell phone is 503. No, I'm just messing. I wouldn't do that to you.
I actually still have a Birmingham area code.
Oh, well, then I'm wrong.
All right. Then we're 30% there.
It's a 205.
There you go. I remember 25. 25. What, Judah? What do you think the best age is? What's a good age? 25 is solid because you're sort of figuring things out. You're starting to get your feet underneath you a little bit as an adult, but also like you're young enough that you can just do something wild and you're being youthful instead of irresponsible, quote unquote. 25 is good. What do you think one of the best ages is?
That's a good option because you're looking for the proportion between quality of life and lack of circumstances or lack of consequences is what I mean. You know, quality of life and the lack of consequences with your actions. And 25 is right in the middle of there where if you did do something stupid, you could still recover. You still got mom and dad. You know, you're not off their health plan until 26. You know, I used all those years up before I had to get on a full time. You're still figuring out yourself professionally, what your identity is, you know, who your, you know, lifelong partner is going to be, if that's a route you're thinking and all that. And there's just enough fun to be had while just enough independence as well to, you know, right in the prime of life. But I'm 27 right now, and I got to tell you what, I'm hoping that my best days are still in front of me. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, they're not.
And I'm worried. And I'm worried that it's not the case. I'm worried that the best days are already behind me. So maybe you're right. 25.
15 years from now, a vegan cupcake is going to be the highlight of your week, dude. I'm not even playing. Just like, hey, things are so bad. It's good.
I'm watching, 15 year ahead of myself just to slam that gluten-free cupcake and having the time of his life. And I think that's going to be me. And I'm a little concerned.
I'm getting just past the frosting. I'm about to hit the cupcake part itself. So the opinion might change. Might change here in just a minute. But the frosting, Adriana, solid.
I'm saying, though, you should have taken it out of the wrapper and just eaten it all in one bite. That's what I did.
I didn't have time. I was like, I was in your room and our intro music was played. I had to just run.
That looks like a half of a Dixie cup.
Yeah. It is. Wrapper. That's exactly what it is.
Oh, nailed it.
It was good, though. Was it vanilla? Just vanilla frosting?
Just vanilla.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing tonight for your birthday? What are you doing?
I'm going to dinner with my mom and my sister and the twins.
Yeah. Are you going to class it up, go somewhere fancy, or are you just going to do like your guys' old standby, kind of a family favorite?
We will probably... Red Robin has been a pretty big ritual in my family since we were very small. So we might do that. Probably gonna do that.
Okay, well, that'll be a good time. Can I come?
Of course.
Hey. Oh, they sing for your birthday there too.
Yeah,
so that's
they
perfect.
Do.
Yeah, we might have to sing for Adriana in the next hour. We might have to give her a little on-air happy birthday song. That I think that is certainly called for. All right, coming up on the other side, we've got the 2 at 2. Still got Punch It audio ahead of us, and maybe we'll get to hear the soothing sounds of Judah Newby singing happy birthday to Alabama Adriana.
Don't get your hopes up.
Oh, it's like a Wolverine's purr, baby.
There'll be sounds. I don't know how soothing they'll be.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.